All right, I'm going to go ahead and get started. Welcome to the October 15th, 2024 meeting of the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board. For everyone joining us in the meeting room, please turn off or silence your cell phones. This meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so please speak clearly. This meeting is being conducted in a physical location and is also available via remote access. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted with your camera off until it is your turn to speak. The host will then unmute you and ask you to turn on your camera if you have one. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute and your camera turned off. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item and then may choose to exit the meeting or continue. Vice Chair Vivian Perez has requested to participate remotely in this meeting in accordance with the provisions of the Bagley-Keene Open Meetings Act, specifically Government Code Section 11123.2. Remote participation requires that a quorum of the board members be physically present at a single teleconference location that is open, visible, and audible to the public. At this time, I would like to ask the clerk to do a roll call.
Chair Satin?
Present.
Vice Chair Perez?
Present.
Board Member Gonzalez? Absent. Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Present.
Board Member Music?
Present.
Board Member Wright?
Here.
Chair Satin, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Vice Chair Perez may proceed with remotely participating in this public meeting. Although she need not disclose her precise location, she must disclose whether there are any individuals 18 years or older present in the same room as her, as well as the general nature of her relationship with those individuals. Vice Chair Perez?
I'm by myself.
Okay, thank you. Further, Government Code Section 11123.2 requires that Vice Chair Perez remain on camera for the entire opening. For the entire open portion of the public meeting, unless there is a poor internet connection or it would be technologically impracticable to do so. If she needs to turn off her camera during the open portion of the meeting, she must announce her reason for doing so. Council, are there any other legal issues with Vice Chair Perez's remote participation at this time?
Not at this time.
Thank you. All right, can we get the flag up for, we have the flag. Board Member Beltran Serrano, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? The purpose of this public meeting is for regional board members to obtain testimony and information from concerned and affected parties within the Colorado River Basin region regarding water quality issues. We welcome hearing from the public at this meeting. Any person wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request as described in the agenda instructions. For those items listed on today's agenda, you will make your comments at the time the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may speak now during the public forum. Comments will generally be limited to 3 minutes. The board clerk can now identify the speakers who have submitted speaker cards for the public forum. Do we have any cards?
Yes, we do.
Okay, awesome.
We have via Zoom, Czar Apothekara. Czar, are you there? Czar, can you hear me? Sorry, we're not getting any response.
Are there any other cards?
Nope, that would be it.
Okay. I guess we'll move on then. We now move on to agenda item 3, which is the review and approval of the minutes for the board's prior meeting on September 10th, 2024. Is there a motion and a second to adopt the minutes?
I so move.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, for agenda item 4, the board will now hear an update from Laurel Firestone, our liaison to the State Water Resources Control Board. Laurel?
Hi. Good to see you all remotely.
Feel like it's been a while, but I have a few updates on some of the many things going on at the board. So we issued a kind of our annual review of our funding that's gone out. We've just over the fiscal year, over the last fiscal year, distributed $880 million for various drinking water systems, wastewater systems, and other resiliency efforts through our Division of Financial Assistance. We also took a number of actions around protecting our groundwater. It's 10 years into the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, and in September, we voted to bring the Tule Subbasin into probation with some exceptions. So we're continuing to make progress to protect water supplies and hopeful that locals will be able to maintain control over their local actions and ensure that they can protect their groundwater supplies adequately. We adopted in July our water conservation and efficiency legislation, and in September, the Office of Administrative Law approved it. So it's going into effect January 1st. And again, that requires the state's largest suppliers to calculate water budgets based on residential indoor water use, residential outdoor water use, and then commercial, industrial, and institutional landscapes with dedicated irrigation meters. And the supplier's maximum allowable volume of water loss from leakage. And there are increasingly stringent standards. So by 2040, the standards will be at their most efficient levels. And the full budget is called the water use objective. And they need to, water agencies need to start complying with that overall water use objective in 2027. So there are not requirements on individual residential water use through this, but rather there's a budget set on a combination of overall indoor and outdoor, and getting to a system level budget. So as I said, in September, we held a probationary hearing and we voted to bring the Tule Subbasin into probation. We are also, we've also considering and held workshops on the Kern Subbasin. We are moving forward with a notice of pre-hearing conference for the Delta Conveyance Project. And actually we have our pre-hearing conference will be held this week. Our hearing officer is presiding over that, and she is also presiding over the Sites Project Authority's hearing for the Sites Project, and that is in process right now. There's many hearing dates ongoing as that continues to be considered. There's also work around ocean desal scoping, and there's a public notice and an opportunity to comment on proposed amendments to seawater desalination provisions. We are going to have a information item in November 5th meeting, or actually I think that will be changed to November 6th because of Election Day, on just our annual report of wastewater and recycled water in California, because we're continuing to track how we're making progress towards the water supply strategy goals and our goals overall are to reuse at least 800,000 acre feet of water per year by 2030 and 1.8 million by 2040. And The main thing I wanted to highlight was that this weekend, the University of California Riverside Salt and Sea Task Force will host the fourth biannual Salt and Sea Summit. It will be October 18th and 19th, and it's at Riverside Palm Desert campus, but also has remote viewing locations available on the second day at two satellite locations in Imperial and Mecca. You can still register at saltandseasummit.org. And Friday has a number of scientific sessions that are focused on scientific research ongoing on air, water, and health. And then Saturday is kind of a recap of those scientific sessions, but focused discussion on policy and planning and projects, development, community needs, and ecology. So I'll be down there helping to moderate the community needs panel, and I would love to see some of you if you are able to join. And that's my update. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Laurel? All right, thanks, Laurel.
Thanks.
Okay, moving on to the uncontested calendar of items for adoption. All items appearing under the uncontested items calendar are acted upon by the board in one motion without discussion. At this time, there is one item on the uncontested calendar, agenda item 5. Item 5 is a waste discharge requirement order for Coachella Valley Water District's North Cathedral City Regional Stormwater Project. As part of this project, the Coachella Valley Water District will be paying funds in the form of a in-kind contribution of land to the Coachella Valley Conservation Commission for impact mitigation under Coachella Valley Multiple Species Habitat Conservation Plan, consistent with other projects in the area. Although I do not have a direct financial stake in the approval of this project, I work for the commission, and I therefore believe that recusal is necessary to avoid the appearance of a conflict of interest. So I'll hand, due to my recusal, I will turn things over to Vice Chair Perez for the board's consideration of agenda item 5.
Good morning. Does any member wish to remove any item from the uncontested calendar? If any member of the public wishes to remove an item from the uncontested calendar, you need to have filled out a speaker card. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards on these items?
No, there is not.
Thank you. David, I think you need some help on here.
So the next step would be to hearing no objections or public comments. The next step will be to take a roll call vote, Madam Vice Chair. So you may, I guess that would then require a motion.
Do we have a motion? We have no contested items.
So moved.
Member Music has made a motion.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Roll call, please.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Chair Satin has recused himself. Motion carries.
Thank you. We bring Board Member back, please.
All right. Thank you, Vice Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Proceeding now to the contested and discussion calendar of items for adoption, beginning with agenda item 6. I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 6, which is a cease and desist order for the Turtle Rock 29 Homeowners Association Turtle Rock Estates Subdivision Wastewater Collection, Treatment, and Disposal System. This hearing will be conducted in accordance with the hearing procedure dated August 22nd, 2024. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff have separated functions between an advisory team and a prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Paula Rasmussen, the board's executive officer, and David Lancaster, the board's counsel. The prosecution team consists of the board's assistant executive officer, Cassandra Owens, board staff Jose Cortez and Michael Perez, Wendy Wiles of the Office of Enforcement, and David Boyer's assistant chief counsel from the Office of Enforcement. The discharger is represented by Samir Maldonado. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
Yes, we have the discharger available for questions.
Wonderful, thank you. I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do. All right, before testifying, please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath. The order of the speakers for this item are presentation by Wendy Wiles, Office of Enforcement, commencement comments from the discharger, comments from public, board member comments and discussion, and then I will close the hearing. Ms. Wiles, here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. My name is Wendy Wiles, and I'm an environmental program manager, retired annuitant with the State Water Board's Office of Enforcement, and I have taken the oath. This hearing today is for the Turtle Rock Wastewater Treatment System. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt a cease and desist order requiring the discharger, Turtle Rock 29 Homeowners Association, to comply with its waste discharge requirements. Next slide. Next slide. In this presentation, I'll show you where the facility is located, and then I'll discuss its waste discharge requirements, history of violations, and my inspection in May 2022. I'll describe the notice of violation that resulted from my inspection and the subsequent actions taken by the discharger. And then finally, I'll summarize the need for a cease and desist order, the contents of the tentative order, and the proposed revisions to the change sheet. Next slide. This slide shows where the Turtle Rock subdivision is located. The picture to the left shows the town of 29 Palms, with Turtle Rock shown in the red circle. It's about 1.5 miles north of Highway 62 and about a mile north of the 29 Palms City Hall. The subdivision itself is shown in the picture to the right. As of last year, 57 homes had been constructed, which is about 40% of the planned number of 143 homes. Turtle Rock's wastewater treatment facility is on the northeast side of the subdivision, shown in the red circle in the far right. Okay. Turtle Rock is regulated by Waste Discharge Requirements Order Number R7-2006-0036, which is found as Exhibit 1 in your evidence. For the remainder of this presentation, I'll refer to these waste discharge requirements as the permit. The permit was adopted in 2006 prior to construction of any homes. The permit states that domestic wastewater will flow to an activated sludge treatment plant with disposal to 26 seepage pits. This permit is similar to many other waste discharge requirements that were adopted in the mid-2000s for discharges of domestic wastewater. In addition to standard prohibitions and specifications, there's a flow limit, as well as effluent limits for five constituents: pH, BOD, total suspended solids, total dissolved solids, and total nitrogen. Next slide. A review of the case file shows that Turtle Rock has had multiple violations over the last decade. In 2011, Water Board staff inspected the facility in response to an odor complaint and found that the plant was not being properly operated or maintained. The incoming screening box wasn't being pumped often enough, causing odors, and two of the four blower units were not operating, which also caused odors. And in addition, the flow meter was not working. A 2013 inspection found that the plant was not operating properly and that multiple required items were missing, including the fence, blowers, mixers, and the lift crane. In 2015, staff's inspection found that the fence had been replaced and that the treatment plant was operating, except that it was not treating the waste properly, and the nitrogen effluent limit was consistently exceeded. In addition, the flow meter had not been working for years. And finally, there were only 7 seepage pits instead of the 26 pits described in the permit. Of those 7 pits, 2 were damaged. And then a 2017 inspection found that the 7 seepage pits were not being maintained. They had either sunk below grade or had broken caps. Next slide. In May 2022, I inspected the facility. The inspection report is found as Exhibit 8 in your evidence list. These pictures are from that inspection and show the flow of the wastewater. Influent flows by gravity to the concrete screening box, and then the water is split, and half of it flows to the north side aeration tank and secondary clarifier, and the other half flows to the south side aeration tank and secondary clarifier. The photo on the right here shows the north side. At the time of my inspection, the south side had been inoperable for some time, so only the north side was in use. After treatment, the water flows to the seepage pit area for disposal. I found that this area was overgrown with 8-foot-tall shrubs, and it was impossible to determine how many pits had been installed and whether or not they were functioning correctly. I also found that the flow meter was not working. The treatment plant operator told me that the plant should be able to treat waste to meet the effluent limits, but it was constrained by worn-out parts. Next slide. In June 2022, Water Board staff issued a notice of violation, which is found as Exhibit 9 in your evidence list. The violations included failure to properly operate and maintain the wastewater treatment plant, failure to install the 26 permits described, I'm sorry, the 26 seepage pits described by the permit, and failure to comply with effluent limits. The NOV required the discharger to hire an engineer to evaluate and propose upgrades to the treatment facility and to submit a timeline for those upgrades. Next slide. The discharger responded by hiring an engineer who inspected the site and then submitted a number of reports. The reports documented that several plant components had been replaced or fixed. The engineer also proposed numerous modifications so that the plant would operate correctly. With respect to the seepage pits, the engineer stated that there was not enough information to determine if the 7 existing pits disposed of as much waste as the 26 pits described by the permit, and the engineer said that additional investigation was needed. Water Board staff then met with the engineer and the Homeowners Association and agreed to phased implementation. However, there has been no work since the fall of 2023, and the effluent quality has declined dramatically in the last year, as shown in Attachment A to the tentative cease and desist order. Okay, next slide. Okay. The prosecution team is proposing the cease and desist order because we have already allowed the discharger over 2 years to voluntarily address the problems, which have been known since at least 2011. And however, the wastewater treatment plant is still not operating correctly. The proposed cease and desist order would address the 2 main issues at the plant. The first issue is that the wastewater consistently exceeds the permit's effluent limits. Monitoring results for the last 2.5 years are found in Attachment A to the draft order. During that time, the effluent has exceeded multiple limits every month, with total nitrogen exceeding the limit 100% of the time, BOD exceeding the limit 50% of the time, and settleable solids exceeding the limit 40% of the time. The wastewater also exceeds the total dissolved solids, or SALT, limit every month. But because the permit was written before there was a good record of the TDS of the potable water, it turns out that the permit's effluent limit of 350 milligrams per liter is lower than the total dissolved solids of the potable water, which averages 380 milligrams per liter. The permit's limit is not possible to achieve and needs to be revised when the permit is updated. Next slide. The second issue we're concerned about is the seepage pits, which are used to infiltrate the treated wastewater. The permit states that 26 seepage pits will be installed and that there will be a replacement area for another 26 pits. The permit also says that the 26 pits are expected to be fully operational by the time the first model homes are built, which was mid-2006. But beginning in 2015, waterboard inspections document that there are only 7 seepage pits and that these pits have not been maintained. The discharger's engineer found that there are not any records describing the pit's construction details or how they're plumbed. Basically, wastewater is being discharged to an area for which we have no idea how it works. We need to know whether the 7 pits are adequate to handle the permitted wastewater flow or whether additional seepage pits need to be installed. After the tentative cease and desist order was issued, the prosecution team met with the Homeowners Association Board of Directors and their management company to explain how we got here, what the cease and desist order would require, and how the hearing procedures work. The discharger then submitted written comments asking for an extension of 2.5 years beyond the final compliance date in the tentative order, from December 2025 to June 2028. They state that they need time to obtain funding and that the Homeowners Association was unaware of the problems with the wastewater treatment plant. The prosecution team understands the need to obtain funding, but given the decade of noncompliance, we think that June 2028 is too long. However, we have prepared a change sheet to extend the compliance timelines by 1 year, with full compliance extended from December 2025 to December 2026. The change sheet also includes a requirement to submit a financing plan. As to the statement that the Homeowners Association was unaware of the problems, we note that Exhibit 14 of the evidence is a summary of staff's meeting with a Homeowners Association board member in October 2022, and he was aware of the problems with the wastewater plant at that time. Next slide. If adopted with the change order, the cease and desist order would require the discharger to submit multiple technical reports, most of which must be prepared by a California registered engineer. The first report is due at the end of November and will provide information about the engineer that's been hired to complete the tasks and include a financing plan describing how the discharger will obtain the funds needed to upgrade the treatment plant and then properly operate it and maintain it in the future. The next report is due in February 2025, and it's the engineer's work plan for upgrading the treatment plant. Progress reports would be due in June and September 2025. And then in December 2025, the discharger would submit an evaluation of the seepage pit area, including whether the 7 existing pits have enough capacity to dispose of the wastewater flow allowed by the permit. And if they don't, then the report is to include a proposal for installing additional pits by October 2026. 3 more progress reports are due in March, June, and September 2026. And then by November 1st, 2026, the discharger is to submit a technical report documenting that the wastewater treatment plant has been upgraded as proposed and that any additional seepage pits have been installed. And finally, by December 1st, 2026, the effluent must consistently meet the permit's limits for BOD, total suspended solids, settleable solids, and total nitrogen. In addition, the discharger would implement reasonable source control methods and do its best to meet the TDS effluent limit. Next slide. You should have a copy of the change sheet in front of you, and I'll go through the changes briefly. Changes 1 and 12 update attachment A to include the most recent monthly monitoring data. Change 2 adds 1 more month to the due date for the November 2024 report and adds the requirement to submit a financing plan. Change 3 adds 2 months to the due date for the work plan for upgrading the wastewater treatment facility. Changes 4 and 5 add 3 months to each of the progress reports due in 2025. Change 6 adds 6 months to the due date for the seepage pit evaluation report. Changes 7, 8, and 9 add quarterly progress reports in 2026. Change 10 adds 1 year to the due date for the report certifying that all upgrades have been made to the wastewater treatment facility. And then change 11 adds 1 year to the date for full compliance with the permit. Next Next slide. In summary, this wastewater treatment plant has had significant violations since 2011. It is not treating its wastewater adequately, resulting in consistent effluent limit violations. In addition, the anticipated number of seepage pits were not installed. This proposed cease and desist order will set timeframes and expectations, and the goal is to have this facility in full compliance by December 2026. The cease and desist order includes language allowing the executive officer to approve time extensions if delays are beyond the control of the discharger. And the prosecution has prepared a change sheet which provides a one-year extension to the timeline that we originally proposed. In summary, the prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the tentative cease and desist order with the changes listed in the change sheet. This ends our formal presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Good morning.
Morning.
Did you state there's 143 potential hookups and 57 of them are developed?
That's correct, and that's what's listed. The 143 homes are listed in the permit as how many it's going to grow to, and by counting on Google Earth, there's 57 or 53 homes.
And do we know, I mean, this project is like 12 years now. Is anyone actually still building out there?
I do not know.
And it seems, you know, I did a quick calculation, the plants for 40,000 gallons per day, and for 143 homes, that's like 280 gallons per household, which seems very high. And are they getting, is the capacity of the seven seepage pits taking care of the flow from the 57 homes, so maybe they don't really need 28?
So there's a couple things to answer here. One is that we don't know how those seepage pits are working at all. When the engineer went out 2 years ago, year and a half ago, to look, he couldn't even find the pipes that were leading from the plant to the pits. So we have absolutely no idea. Another thing is that there were 8-foot tall trees in that area. So that suggests that those seepage pits are not infiltrating the wastewater, that it's near the surface allowing the trees to grow. So that suggests issues with it. The other bigger picture thing is that when this permit was adopted in 2006, it was for a 40,000 gallon per day plant. If the discharger is not going to build out the rest of the homes, then the board needs to adopt a permit for a smaller size plant, a lower flow. But at this point, we have to enforce on the permit we have in front of us.
Okay, and when you mentioned the HOA, since the developer still owns over 50% of the parcels, aren't they really in control of the HOA?
I do not know, but the HOA did submit a name change order, and they are the discharger. They are legally the discharger. I don't know how the developer fits into this.
Memory music, yeah, the HOA does own the wastewater treatment plant, the systems. The fact that they own a number of parcels, we don't know. That's not in the record. And so, you know, there may be a third-party owner of the remaining land in the area, but they're not subject to the order.
But if that's the case, that's still 86 parcels. 86 versus 57, I think they'd be in control of the HOA. And I know in previous developments that I've been involved in, the developer was in charge of the HOA till it went beyond the 50% level, and then they would turn it over to the HOA. So I'm just curious of who really is in control, the developer or the current homeowners.
I do believe that an HOA representative is on the line.
Okay.
And he could answer that.
Thank you.
Sure.
I just have one question regarding the timeline. It seems like there's a period of minimal outreach, I guess, to the HOA between 2017 and 2022. Even though we knew that there was still non-compliance issues, is there any explanation for why there was no connection to the HOA for those 5 years?
I was not involved till 2022, so I can't answer that. And the case file doesn't have any information.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
One last question. So do we think their equipment isn't the correct equipment, or is it operator error?
I think it's more that the equipment has not been maintained over the years. There has not been funding to maintain and keep the plant operating to the way it should. I think the operator is doing as best it can with the equipment it has, but my understanding is the equipment's outdated, not maintained. They need better equipment. But apparently the plant was designed to meet these effluent limits when it was back in 2006. It should have met these limits, but then over the years, there hasn't been adequate operation and maintenance of the plant.
Okay. Thank you.
There's no more additional questions for Ms. Wiles. I'd like to invite the discharger to speak or provide any comments if they have any.
Frank Del Campo?
Del Zampo, yes.
Del Zampo.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. So I suppose I'm here just to provide some background and assist the board. I've been an owner in the tract from when it was originally built. I'm trying to see my screen just shows my name now. I'd like to see the screen showing the slides if possible. Can you put up a slide number 3? I'm not seeing it, but.
We're not either.
Okay, here we go. I'm seeing, nope, that's my name. I will say I did raise my hand and took the oath.
Oh, thank you.
Number 3 has the overhead photo. Nope. This is showing the total dissolved solids. Can you put up whoever's running this?
Yes, just a second, please. We're working on that.
Okay, thank you. So as background, I've been an owner in this, thank you very much. I've been an owner in this community since the beginning. My wife and I purchased a property on Friendly Lane when it was essentially the dirt. The developer was Pinka Capital. I'm giving you the background. I think it's important for you to understand because some of the questions that Member Music asked, I think I can answer. First, the HOA or this community was originally designed to be 66 in tract 1 and 68 in tract 2. So that's 134 units, if my math is correct. I believe that's correct. 134 units. So the 66 in tract 1 is what you're looking at here, the overhead view. Pinka Capital went into receivership. I want to say it was 2008 or 2009. The main member was convicted of some workers' compensation issues, and the development stalled. If you recall, there was a big recession around that time too, 2008, 2009. So the community stalled. Then a group of investors bought the tract 1 here, okay? The overhead that looks like you can see the 57 or so homes. And then along the west edge, maybe 4 or 5 that are not built out. The tract 2, where this red arrow coming from left to right hits, that's not part of Turtle Rock. It's not part of our subdivision. It was acquired in a tax sale by a private investor. And to my knowledge, those lots, which have basically been enveloped by the desert, have gone back. They're probably going to end up being foreclosed on. So Turtle Rock, as it stands now, is 57 homes with approximately 50 owners. Some owners have a few properties, and there's a gentleman, or rather a company called Chisel and Tool, that purchased 13 lots, the remaining 13 lots along Corbin Road and Split Rock around 4 or 5 years ago, purchased those to build out those remaining homes. And it's been very slow going. I'm giving you the background. Hopefully you're understanding all this so you can understand my point. We are trying our best, but this is a very small community, primarily military folks like me. I'm retired Marine. Along with retirees who live there. And we've done our best to maintain this facility over the years. I first got involved with the board about 12 years ago when I received a phone call from a concerned neighbor regarding the wastewater treatment facility. And I got involved along with two of my fellow board members. I don't believe they're on this meeting. But I raised my hand to come in and speak. So since then, we hired a management company. And with that management company, the three of us, and then other members over the years, but essentially the three of us have worked very hard to maintain this facility and improve it. I know we've improved it. Evidently, we've not maintained it fully in compliance with the Water Board requirements. So now let's fast forward to 2022, when Ms. Wiles, I believe, got involved. We received notification as a board that there were some issues with the facility. Despite our best efforts, we needed to address. We hired an engineer at a cost of $18,000, which realistically, I mean, thankfully we had it, but it was really fortuitous that we had it. I won't give you all the details, but we basically had a bit of a windfall. So we had the money to hire the engineer and do the repairs that we thought were adequate. And I really didn't give it a second thought after that. I know our management company at the time was coordinating with our treatment facility maintenance folks. And my understanding was it had been maintained properly. So it was a shock when in, I believe it was August, either July or August, we became aware that not only had we not come into compliance with our discharge limits, they had actually gotten worse. I was shocked. I know the other board members were as well. I don't think it, you know, it was a lack of communication necessarily from the former management company and us. It just... We thought the matter had been resolved. So now we're at this point where we have realistically approximately 50 owners and 66 lots with a facility that we're looking at $80,000 to $90,000 to bring into compliance. I'm using those numbers based on what our engineer quoted. I believe the engineer quoted $48,000 just to run the work. So please don't hear me to be saying that we're trying somehow to shirk responsibility, because we're not at all. We are trying our best to clean the water. We all want clean water. So I think at this point, you know, we asked for a longer extension. The prosecution team agreed to extend it out a year. We're going to pursue some options for funding. You know, a special assessment of $1,200 to $1,500 for these owners. Thankfully, I'm in a position I personally can afford it, but I know a lot of these owners are not in that position. So where's the money going to come from? It appears that there are public funds that we can access. And if there's anyone there who can assist with that, you know, I'll be happy to give my phone number. Or Samir's there at the hearing, I believe, or maybe he's on Zoom. He's our new management rep, but we definitely want to bring this into compliance. One other point I'd like to mention is the issue of the seepage pits. So this was originally designed, as I understand it, to accommodate 134 units. I believe that's the number, because the first tract was 66 units. The second tract, that's no longer part of the subdivision, was 68. So again, if my math is right, that's 134. Well, realistically, when this community is built out, which might be another 3 to 4 years, we're looking at 66 households. So a seepage field, a seepage pit field of 26 pits, it just seems like overkill to me. I mean, I don't know how much each pit is designed to handle, but if there's a way to modify the requirement from the permit of 26 seepage pits down to something more realistic, I mean, if we're only talking about half the number of homes, maybe 10, 12, 13, I don't know. I don't like the number 13 as the number, but maybe 12. So I'm hoping that this explains a little bit of the background. We're on essentially our third builder in this community. The original developer lost the community to receivership that was purchased approximately a year later by a consortium of two attorneys and a developer. They subsequently lost the development during the recession. And it, like I said, in 2012, I got involved in helping out. I don't know if formally we ever took possession of the wastewater treatment facility, but de facto, you know, we've been maintaining it. Whether by law we're required to or not, it sounds like, based on a comment from the staff, we are. I just have no personal knowledge as to any official takeover of that facility. Oh, the other thing, back in last point, then I'll stop. In 2022, we were told that the city was in process in talks with the state about securing funding for a central sewage system within the city of 29 Palms. And now evidently that's fallen by the wayside. So this development and these owners here, you know, it's just, we've been hit with one thing after another, and we're doing our best. As an aside, 29 Palms, this little development is considered one of the best neighborhoods in 29 Palms. People like to live here. It's a lot of rental properties that turn over with Marines coming in and out from the base. I don't know the exact number, but as you can imagine, Marines move into the base, they buy a house in development. When they get orders, they move, and then they put it into a rental. So we're not talking about, again, a bunch of rich people here. This is folks who, I think a lot of them live paycheck to paycheck. Okay, I'm done. I've said my say. I think, you know, we're not really fighting over this. I know it says this is a contested hearing. We want clean water. We want to come into compliance. I think my only dispute is with the number of seepage pits, based on the fact that this development is only going to be half the size of what was originally planned. I'll take any questions if you have it.
Thank you, Mr. Del Zampo. Any questions for the discharger?
Yes. So what you're currently saying, there's 57 homes on your site, and you're going to go up?
That's my understanding. Again, if you look at this overhead that Ms. Wiles provided, along Corbin Road, down at the north end there, there's three, you see three lots that are vacant. So there's actually a home going up on one of those lots. And the one adjacent to, actually, no, I take that back. Those, yes, there's one adjacent. So of those, that overhead view, there's one more going up, but it hasn't been sold yet, and neither has the one to the right of it. So I guess 56, you know, occupied homes at this point. And then along Split Rock, as you see, Split Rock Avenue goes north to south there. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lots that have not been completed. Again, the same builder who bought those 13 lots a couple, I mean, I want to say 4 years ago, has plans to build those out. That's going to happen, I think, within the next 3 or 4 years. I'm actually a real estate broker, so I'm assisting in the sale of those, by the way. I don't know if that needs to be mentioned or not, but that's part of the reason why I know so much about all this. I think I've sold every house in that community over the years.
So what happens
when... 57, I think, is the correct number approximately, sir. I'm sorry, that's a long answer.
So what is the other track for 68 homes that currently supposed to hook into your wastewater facility, are they going to hook in when they are developed?
I don't believe they are, sir. My understanding is the second owners, that consortium of the two attorneys and the developer, when they lost the development, that those homes went to tax sale, that tract, I should say, went to a tax sale and were never annexed into the association. So they are not part of Turtle Rock HOA. So we have the 66 total lots, once they're all built out, that will be part of Turtle Rock. The other 68, I have no idea what's ultimately going to happen to those. Approximately 2 years ago, the owner attempted to sell those, but was unsuccessful. I saw that on the market, they never sold.
So, Frank, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
This whole project is within the city of 29 Palms, correct?
Yes, sir.
It's not in the county. It's in the incorporated area.
Yes.
So when the city approved this project, it seems to me those 68 homes would be included in the current wastewater facility you have.
I believe that was the plan, that those 68, that this facility was designed to accommodate 66 plus 68, 134 homes. However, once Penka Capital went into receivership and Brewer and his partners acquired it, and then they lost the development to a tax sale. Well, there's more to it as well, but you don't need to know. I don't think you care to know all the details, but they lost this development during the recession, 2009, 2010. We've been limping along with the 50 some odd homes on this wastewater facility. I think from a planning standpoint, it doesn't make sense to require us to put in 26 seepage pits when half the homes realistically will never hook up to that facility. Does that make sense?
Yeah, your comment makes sense if they never hook up. My only question is, where are they going to hook up when they're developed if currently they're going to be in your plant? How are you going to get
them? Well, they're not in our
plant. How are you going to get
them? I think the point is they're not. Unless someone much smarter and wealthier than anybody on our board comes along and purchases that tract and then negotiates with the homeowner association to become part of Turtle Rock HOA, because right now it's not.
You know, I'm not an attorney, and all I can say is before it's reduced, we probably want to ensure that they're not going to hook up in the future. Or is that something the regional board shouldn't be concerned about at this time, David?
I think a tax sale of the property results in those properties not being part of the HOA. And
hey, David, my question is,
so you're worried about capacity?
I'm worried about when it was approved, mm-hmm. regardless of the HOA, the city approved it to accommodate 134 homes.
Yeah.
So until that gets out of the city, I would think those homes right now, unless they put their own package treatment plant or whatever, their own system on their subdivision, they're still included.
Speaking out of all respect, because we are in a city council chambers, What the city was doing was a planning action, is saying, okay, yeah, we're going to approve this development because they have, you know, all the wastewater. Well, first of all, the question is, if you subdivide all these parcels and rezone them as residential, where is that wastewater going to go? And they said, ah, it's all going to go to the package plant. And that's all as far as the city is requiring. Now, if somebody does develop that remaining area, those were all subdivided parcels, so they are already zoned, but they're not going to have access unless they are, and they're also not part of the HOA, as we've heard. So what that means is that if those parcels are developed, they're going to have to negotiate access and join the HOA, and that would be subject to negotiation between the HOA members and the prospective builders or residents. Until that happens, I would assume that it's probably not likely that they're going to be able to build those things. If they're not already part of the HOA, they, you know, you're not going to build a house with a fancy bathroom and if there's nowhere to drain to. So given that, I think that can be some revision of the waste discharge requirements may be appropriate at this point. And maybe that is something that we could look at as a permitting action at a later point. The problem with these waste discharge requirements is that I think in 2006 and 2008, there was a lot of growth and development occurring in the region, and a lot of these, we've already seen several of these similar proceedings where the HO or the CDO, the cease and desist order, relates to a WDR, the initial waste discharge requirements order that was adopted before the subdivision was actually built, and said, great, here you go, here's a bunch of permits, and go out and build all these subdivisions. Well, as we're finding out in this proceeding, things, as in life, don't always go to plan. And so where, although the existing permit doesn't really require a minimum number of pits or you know, a certain level of capacity, it certainly does make clear assumptions about what the build out of this subdivision would be. And I guess all this is to say is a very long way of saying, I suppose we could, you know, look at this from a permit perspective and cross that bridge when we get there.
So it was designed with the 27 pits to accommodate 134 homes. And what you're saying is because that parcel currently isn't part of the HOA, they can't expect to hook into that system.
I think that would be negotiated because the property is probably, they're going to need to unless they want to build their own package plant and have their own option. They can do that as well.
Negotiated is different than required, and that was my question.
The practical realities would impose their own requirements in a certain sense.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for the discharger?
Yeah, I just got a question. So do the 7 pits work for the 66 lots that it's going to hook to? Is that 7? Are they adequate?
That is wildly above my pay grade.
I know. that was my concern. So I can see where we could do this and not make that other part of the permit. So when they do come, then the HOA has to, if they want to connect with the HOA, they first of all have to belong to it, but then the HOA has to come back and get a bigger, a different permit, correct?
Well, the existing permit does not prescribe a minimum or maximum number of pits or a ratio of pits per household. So the permit was clearly issued with the assumption of full build out and that they would have a much larger number of seepage pits than they currently have. That said, reading the cease and desist order, and Ms. Wiles will be able to opine on this further, the overall issues are not necessarily just a pure capacity issue. It's a condition and maintenance and just overall operation. That was that's the summary that was in the staff report. And, you know, there may be issues with the number of pits. However, Water Code 13360 also prohibits us from dictating the manner of compliance with the limitations and requirements that we prescribe. So if we say you have to meet these numbers, if they can show and demonstrate that a different number, a certain number of pits, it works for them and it will meet our requirements, then that's fine. So we don't always want to be too prescriptive.
You know, David, I agree with you, but I think indirectly, if their capital cost goes down because they don't have to build 27 pits, they can use that additional funding to operate and maintain their current system. So I think it is a big issue.
All right, before we have any further conversation, I just want to see, are there any public comments to hear?
No, there is not.
Okay, awesome. Now we can move into board member comments.
can I make one comment? I'm sorry. I raised my hand.
Sure, go ahead.
So I just heard the gentleman, our member Music, make a comment about our capital. I think I misunderstood, but it sounded like the gentleman was saying we have a chunk of money, an amount of funds, and we're going to be able to use more funds, or we're going to have more funds to put into the waste facility. I don't have my budget in front of me, but we pay dues, and I want to say it all goes to the waste facility and to management. We have streets that are really not in the greatest of shape, but we're not putting money into those because of the wastewater treatment facility. And we have landscaping around the exterior that we're supposed to maintain, but that's dying because we don't have the funds because we're putting it into the wastewater treatment facility. We only have, at this moment, we get the monthly HOA dues from all 66 lots. We did raise the amount this year. We raised the dues by $20 per member. There was, I don't know, a little bit of pushback, not a lot. But what I understood the gentleman to say is made it sound like we have a lot of funds coming in. We don't. The developer does not own the tract. The developer just owns those remaining 7 or 8 lots.
Let me clear up what I said.
Yes, sir.
If this entity needed to build a total of 27 seepage pits, it would cost X amount of dollars. And if you only needed half that amount, there'd be a savings. You wouldn't have to spend as much as if you were building 27. Whatever that increment is, and let's say it's $100, that $100 could be used for maintaining and operating the system. I'm not have the funds. I'm just saying you would have a savings by not having to build 27, which would conceivably could be used for other things for your project.
Thank you. That was the point I was trying to make, asking for a reduction in the demand of seepage pits. Again, I think I can speak for the board, the HOA, we definitely want to be compliant. I think everyone wants clean water. We want to do it in a way that is responsible and that looks out for our owners, our homeowners, of course, and that's practically attainable. So I'll stop talking.
Okay, I have a question regarding the cease and desist order and one of the requirement number 2 about the work plan. And so it says it's by my read, it's requiring that the plant be brought into compliance with the discharge requirements. Does that necessarily include full build out of the 27 pits? Yeah, it seems to me that there's no, Ms. Wiles. It seems to me that there's just no requirement to build out the full complement as long as you bring the existing pits into compliance.
Yeah, so there appears to be a misunderstanding of what the cease and desist order is requiring. In terms of the seepage pits, it asks the engineer to evaluate the existing 7 to see whether they have the capacity to handle the flow permitted by the permit, right? So if those 7 pits can handle the 40,000 gallons a day, then they don't need to install anymore. And that's what we had asked the engineer to do 2 years ago, and he was unable to do that with the existing information. So the engineer said he would need to do some below ground investigation to find out the capacity of the seven pits. So it's possible that they don't need to build anymore. It's possible they need to install two or three more. We don't know.
So you just mentioned if the seven pits could handle 40,000 gallons per day.
Right.
But if that 40,000 is going to be cut in half, say, because they're only going to, how do they go about and change that 40,000 to 20,000? Do they hire an engineer and come up with an engineer's report?
Yeah, they would need to submit a report of waste discharge and ask that their permit be revised.
Okay.
But regardless of the seepage pits, there's still the matter of that plant is not treating the waste to meet the effluent limits.
Correct.
And even if the permit is revised for a flow limit, those effluent limits are going to stay in place.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it sounds like there are two things that need to happen here. One is the issuance of a cease and desist order to compel compliance with the current discharge requirements. And then there's another, sounds like it would be a best practice on behalf of the HOA to have their permit revised by submitting the appropriate paperwork, which may be something you want to consider, I suppose, as you go through this work plan, but is separate from the cease and desist order. Is that an appropriate interpretation?
Yeah, I think it would be in tandem. I mean, obviously, if the cease and desist order is written so that it says, hey, comply with the waste discharge requirements order, if we were to revise the permit or put it under if we were to put it under, say, an alternative permit, if we were to revise the waste discharge requirements order, there may be some necessary revisions to the cease and desist order to reconcile the changes, but otherwise we can, keep the existing cease and desist order and, do that. But there may be other things that we want to take a look at as well. Compliance and permitting are two sides of the same coin sometimes. So you're either compelling them to meet the requirements that you are issuing, or you can change the requirements to meet reality. And sometimes it's a mix of both, in my experience. And so, yeah, I think that's I think a permitting action of some sort would be appropriate. In this case and many others, the permit that still exists right now, I mean, the only change that we've done is, as of a month or so ago, we substituted the new HOA for the original developer. Up until that point, the WDR's order hadn't been changed at all. So we have a permit that has findings that, in retrospect, look vastly aspirational and do not reflect the conditions on the ground. And it is, it's good regulatory hygiene to update these kinds of things from time to time.
And I think just for what it's worth, we're already aware of one of them with the TDS limits that are already below what the baseline is. So that needs to be, would benefit from some housekeeping regulatory work. But anyway, are there any other questions or comments regarding the CDO?
I just have a comment about that. I know the gentleman asked for help maybe with getting grant money or something like that. I think I would suggest the city of 29 Palms to go talk to them and become partners. They would probably need the city as a partner to help if there's any grant money available, and they would probably help them find the pot of money that is available if there is some. But I suggest going to the city and talking to them about that.
Okay, if there's no more comments, I will close the hearing. May I please have a motion to adopt agenda item 6, which is a cease and desist order for Turtle Rock 29 Homeowners Association.
Subject to the change sheet?
Subject to the change sheet.
Also move.
Second.
All right, I have a motion and a second. Thank you. Roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to item number 7. I am now opening the hearing for item 7, which is a cease and desist order for Antoine Garibet for a residential on-site wastewater treatment system located at 58761 Barron Drive in Yucca Valley. This hearing will be conducted in accordance with the hearing procedure dated July 29th, 2024. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff have separated functions between an advisory team and a prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Paula Rasmussen, the board's executive officer, and David Lancaster, the board's counsel. The prosecution team consists of board's assistant executive officer, Cassandra Owens, board staff Emma McCorkle and Michael Perez, and David Boyer's assistant chief counsel from the Office of Enforcement. The discharger, Antoine Garabet, is representing himself. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
No, there is not.
Thank you. I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Okay. All right, do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do. All right. Prior to testifying, please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath. The order of speakers for this item are presentation by Michael Perez, board staff, comments from the discharger, comments from the public, board member comments and discussion, and then I will close the hearing. So Mr. Perez.
Good morning, Chair Sutton, members of the board and members of the public. I'm Michael Perez, and I'm the enforcement coordinator for this regional board, and I have taken the oath. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt the cease and desist order to compel the discharger, Antoine Garabet, to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, which is included in the water quality control plan for the Colorado River Basin region. The property is located at 58761 Barron Drive in the town of Yucca Valley and is owned by Antoine Garabet. Next slide, please. In this presentation, I will be providing a brief summary of the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, the location of the property that is subject to the prohibition, outreach conducted by the High Desert Water District, outreach conducted by regional board staff, the proposed cease and desist order, then finally staff's recommendation. Next slide, please. The town of Yucca Valley's primary drinking water source is groundwater from the Warren subbasin of the Morongo groundwater basin. Beginning in 1993 through 2005, the number of homes approved for construction in the town of Yucca Valley increased significantly. As shown by the graph on the right-hand side of the slide, and because there was no community sewer system available at the time, these homes utilized septic tanks exclusively for their wastewater treatment. Septic tanks discharge nitrates and other waste to groundwater. The illustration on the left side of the slide depicts a typical septic tank system and how it works. Basically, waste from the home goes into a septic tank where the solids get separated from the liquids, and the liquids go on to a leach field or seepage pit and then drain into groundwater. Next slide, please. This slide depicts how a septic tank typically functions. It typically functions by gravity and separation of waste due to the differences in density. Material that is less dense in water floats, and material that is more dense in water sinks. Flow out of the septic tank typically occurs by volume displacement. So basically, it takes water to go inside the tank so water could go outside of the tank. And in 2003, a USGS study found that the increase in nitrate contamination in the Warren subbasin was a result of wastewater loading to groundwater. This increase in nitrates posed a significant threat to public health, as the use of nitrate-contaminated drinking water to prepare infant formula can be harmful to infants and even fatal. Next slide, please. The 2003 USGS study reported that the primary cause of nitrate pollution in the Morongo groundwater basin was due to septic tank effluent from households, commercial, and industrial facilities within and surrounding the town of Yucca Valley. According to the study, from 1995 through 2001, the nitrate as NO3 concentrations in groundwater in the Warren subbasin increased from a background concentration of 10 milligrams per liter to more than the US EPA water quality maximum contaminant level of 45 milligrams per liter. In response to the increase, on May 19, 2011, the regional board adopted a resolution to prohibit the discharge of wastewater from on-site wastewater treatment systems in the town of Yucca Valley and made the resolution a top priority. Then on January 17, 2018, the High Desert Water District started the construction of a wastewater reclamation facility. The facility would provide a higher level of treatment to the wastewater collected, thus controlling the nitrate as NO3 concentration discharged to groundwater. Next slide, please. The Regional Water Board resolution led to an amendment to the Regional Water Board's basin plan, which consists of a phased septic tank prohibition on new and existing septic tank systems within the town of Yucca Valley. The illustration depicts the town of Yucca Valley and the two phases to be implemented. So basically the green area is phase one, and the outside area, like a orangey type color, is phase two. We are currently implementing phase one, which has an implementation schedule in the basin plan, where by December 31st, 2023, the discharge of wastewater from on-site wastewater treatment systems shall be prohibited or shall be prohibited when a municipal sewage collection system becomes available. Once either of those dates is triggered, a discharger is required to cease discharging from an on-site wastewater treatment system within 180 days and connect to the municipal sewage collection system. Next slide, please. This illustration depicts phase one in a more detailed and includes the stages within phase one. The different stages designate specific date ranges of when sewer became available. The property belonging to Mr. Garabet is located at 58761 Barron Drive, which is in the vicinity of where the arrow is pointing. And as you can see, the property is located within stage two. The stage two area had a sewer availability of March 2020. Therefore, the discharger was to cease discharging and connect to the sewer system within 180 days after March 2020, which sets a compliance date of September 2020. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates the distance of sewer to the discharger's property as being less than 200 feet. The blue shaded area depicts the discharger's property. The green line depicts the location of the sewer main. The black line depicts the lateral to the property. And the white dot depicts the approximate location of the septic tank. And down on the right lower corner of the illustration, there is a 50-foot scale, which suggests that the lateral is less than 50 feet in length. The basin plan defines sewer as being available for residential parcels when the public sewer on any building or exterior drainage facility connected thereto is located less than 200 feet from any existing or proposed building or exterior drainage facility on the parcel, and the parcel abuts and is served by such public sewer. Therefore, this property met the criteria of sewer availability as defined in the basin plan. Next slide, please. This slide illustrates the property as being inhabitable. It's a Google Street View screenshot of the home, and as you can see, there's a home there on the property. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates that there is an active water account on the property, and that there is current water usage. Next slide, please. This slide and the next slide depicts the attempts to notify the discharger of the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition and the requirement to cease discharging to the ground via septic tank. The basin plan requires that the discharger be notified prior to the respective sewer availability date, and as such, the High Desert Water District sent their first notification of the upcoming sewer availability during the month of April 2018, and then sent a second notification of the upcoming sewer availability during the month of August 2019. Next slide. In addition to receiving notices from the High Desert Water District, prior to the sewer availability date, the discharger also received notices after sewer availability date from the regional board staff. On December 11, 2020, the regional board issued a discharger a notice of violation. The notice of violation notified the discharger of the prohibition of the on-site wastewater treatment systems for the town of Yucca Valley and directed him to comply with this by ceasing to discharge from an on-site wastewater treatment system and connect to the community sewer system. On November 19, 2021, the Regional Water Board issued a discharger a second notice of violation and again directed him to comply with the prohibition. On August 14, 2023, Regional Board staff issued an additional certified letter in an attempt to contact the discharger to compel compliance. The discharger has contacted the regional board staff, but is yet to be in compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition. Therefore, the prosecution team prepared a tentative cease and desist order with a time schedule to mandate compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in a timely manner. Next slide. To notify the discharger of this hearing and in accordance with the hearing procedures from the advisory team's by the advisory team direction, the prosecution team sent the tentative cease and desist order via certified mail. We emailed the tentative hearing procedures, emailed the evidence and witness list, and emailed the presentation slides with change sheet. Next slide. If adopted, the cease and desist order will compel the discharger to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in accordance with a timely schedule. The cease and desist order would require the discharger to submit documentation such as a cost estimate to connect to the sewer system and decommissioning the septic tank by November 14, 2024. It will require the discharger to submit a certificate of connection to the sewer system by December 16, 2024. It would require the discharger to be in full compliance by January 1st, 2025. And if there are any delays caused by circumstances beyond the discharger's control, the discharger may request a deadline extension from the executive officer. Next slide. The prosecution team identified a need for clarification on the proposed cease and desist order that should be included before being adopted. In finding 18 of the tentative cease and desist order, language to convey the protection of groundwater from threatened discharges is being proposed, which is consistent with Water Code Section 13301 and as stated in finding 16 of this tentative cease and desist order. Our proposed changes are noted in this slide as bold and underlined. The portion of the finding that we are proposing to change will read, the Regional Water Board finds that Antoine Garabet owns property on which an on-site wastewater treatment system is located and is being used or could be used, and that a discharge of waste from the on-site wastewater treatment system to groundwater is taking place or threatening to take place in violation of the basin plan as described in the basin plan prohibition section of this order. Thank you. In summary, the property has a septic tank that has been discharging or threatening to discharge nitrates and other wastes to groundwater. Sewer has been available to the discharger since approximately March 2020. Therefore, the discharger was required to stop discharging by September 2020. The discharger was notified by the High Desert Water District prior to sewer availability date, and the discharger was notified by the regional board after the sewer availability date. The cease and desist order sets a reasonable timeline for compliance, and the cease and desist order allows for request for an extension when circumstances beyond the discharger's control affect the time schedule. In conclusion, the prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the tentative cease and desist order with the noted change. And this ends our formal presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Perez. Do we have any comments from the discharger? The discharger here?
No, we do.
All right, and we have no public comments still?
No.
All right, I will, any board member comments, questions, or discussion?
I have a question, Mr. Perez. The billing record that the prosecution team submitted shows, water consumption within the year 2024, and that, you know, for example, the September reading indicated a consumption of 17 units. Those units weren't specified. Do you know what those units are equal to?
I believe it's one of those units is equal to 740 gallons.
Okay. So if they consumed 17 units in September at the property, that would be equal to, 17 times 700, we'll say 750, okay. Approximately 750 gallons. So, okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, David, just for clarification too, that's total water, so some of it could be used for irrigation and wouldn't be impacted by the septic tank.
Certainly.
Did you ever establish like an actual conversation with or lay eyes on the discharger during the during any of this process?
Yes, I actually had conversations with him, and he owns multiple properties and has connected another property, and I believe this is his second property.
Oh, interesting.
He did state that he is in the process of, but I've not received any proof yet.
Okay. Other questions? All right. Any motions to adopt the cease and desist order?
I just have one quick note. I would recommend, my legal recommendation is if the board is inclined to adopt the tentative order, I have an alternative finding that the board may consider instead of the change sheet.
Sure.
I would like to recommend and suggest to the board adopting the tentative order with changes to finding 18 in lieu of the changes specified in the change sheet.
All right, sure, please. Illuminate us.
So the change sheet, the revised finding 18 would read as follows. The High Desert Water District records indicate that the discharger's property has received and consumed water on the property within the last year. It is therefore likely that the subject property has and will continue to generate wastewater that will be discharged from the existing OWTS in violation of the basin plan prohibition. It also does not appear that the property has been abandoned or will be abandoned in the near future. That's the end. And that finding would be in lieu of the change sheet provided by the prosecution team.
Can we throw the change sheet back up? So that would replace the observation that of the current owner with the
slide 15. Slide 15.
Water discharge, or what we're accepting as evidence of water.
Yeah, I can read off the change sheet, the relevant change sheet language. So the prosecution team's change sheet read in relevant part as follows. The regional board finds that Antoine Garibet owns property on which an OWTS is located that is being used or could be used. And that a discharge of waste is taking place or threatening to take place in violation of the basin plan as described in the basin plan prohibition section of this order. So the change that I recommended would be a little bit more detailed and would reflect the water billing record that was submitted.
Board member comments on that? I don't have any.
I can read off my proposed language instead.
Still move with his changes. All
right. Second.
I'll second.
Roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin.
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, oh, sorry. That was closed before that vote. All right, awesome, thank you. Moving on to item 8, I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 8, which is a cease and desist order for Jose J. Reyes for a residential on-site wastewater treatment system located at 6366 Hermosa Avenue in Yucca Valley. The hearing will be conducted in accordance with the hearing procedure dated August 22nd, 2024. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff have separated functions between an advisory team and a prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Paul Rasmussen, the board's executive officer, and David Lancaster, the board's counsel. The prosecution team consists of the board's assistant executive officer, Cassandra Owens, board staff Emma McCorkle, and Michael Perez, and David Boyer's assistant chief counsel for the Office of Enforcement. The discharger, Jose J. Reyes, is representing himself. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for the agenda item?
No, there is not.
I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
All right, please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. I do want to disclose prior to getting into the presentations that the prosecution team did request the admission of supplemental evidence regarding billing records from an earlier period. This request was denied for lack of good cause and proximity to the hearing date. This request came in last week. So with that disclosure, I will hand it over to Mr. Perez for the presentation.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Chair Sutton, members of the board, members of the public. Again, I am Michael Perez, and I'm the enforcement coordinator for this regional board. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt a cease and desist order to compel the discharger, Jose J. Reyes, to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, which is included in the water quality control plan for the Colorado River Basin region. The property is located at 6366 Hermosa Avenue in the town of Yucca Valley and is owned by Jose J. Reyes. Next slide. In this presentation, I will be providing a brief summary of the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, the location of the property that is subject to the prohibition, outreach conducted by the High Desert Water District, outreach conducted by the regional board staff, the proposed cease and desist order, then finally staff's recommendation. Next slide. The town of Yucca Valley's primary drinking water source is groundwater from the Warren subbasin of the Morongo groundwater basin. Beginning in 1993 to 2005, the number of homes approved for construction in the town of Yucca Valley increased significantly, as shown by the graph on the right-hand side of the slide. And because there was no community sewer system available, these homes were mainly handled their wastewater via septic tank. Septic tanks discharge nitrates and other waste to groundwater. The illustration on the left side of the slide depicts a typical septic tank system and how it works. Again, basically, wastewater coming from a home goes to a septic tank where liquids get separated from solids. The liquids go onto a leach field or seepage pit, which is drained into the ground and eventually reach groundwater. Next slide. This slide depicts how a septic tank typically functions. It typically functions by gravity and separation of waste due to differences in density. Material that is less dense than water floats, and material that's more dense than water sinks. Flow out of a septic tank typically occurs by volume displacement. So basically, it takes water to go inside to the tank to have water come out of the tank. In 2003, a USGS study found that the increase in nitrate contamination in the Warren subbasin was a result of wastewater loading to groundwater. This increase in nitrates posed a significant threat to public health, as the use of nitrate contaminated drinking water to prepare infant formula can be harmful to infants and even fatal. Next slide. The 2003 USGS study reported that the primary cause of nitrate pollution in the Morongo groundwater basin was due to septic tank effluent from households, commercial, and industrial facilities within and surrounding the town of Yucca Valley. According to the study, from early 1995 through 2001, the nitrate as NO3 concentrations in groundwater in the Warren Subbasin increased from a background concentration of 10 milligrams per liter to more than the U.S. EPA water quality maximum contaminant level of 45 milligrams per liter. In response to the increase, on May 2011, the Regional Board adopted a resolution to prohibit the discharge of wastewater from on-site wastewater treatment systems in the Tonayuca Valley and made the resolution a top priority. Then on January 17, 2018, the High Desert Water District started the construction of a wastewater reclamation facility. The facility would provide a higher level of treatment to collected wastewater, thus controlling the nitrate as NO3 concentration discharge to groundwater. Next slide. The Regional Water Board resolution led to an amendment to the Regional Water Board's basin plan, which consists of a phased septic tank prohibition on new and existing septic systems within the Tonayuca Valley. This illustration depicts the Tonayuca Valley and the two phases to be implemented. So basically, the green area shown on the slide is phase one, and the outer, more orange type color is phase two. We are currently implementing phase one, which has an implementation schedule in the basin plan, where by December 31st, 2023, the discharge of wastewater from on-site wastewater treatment systems shall be prohibited or shall be prohibited when a municipal sewage collection system becomes available. Once either of those dates is triggered, the discharger is required to cease discharging from an on-site wastewater treatment system within 180 days and connect to the municipal sewage collection system. Next slide. This illustration depicts phase one area in a more detail and includes the stages within phase one. The different stages designate specific date ranges of when sewer became available. The property belonging to Mr. Reyes is located at 6366 Hermosa Avenue, which is in the vicinity of where the arrow is pointing. And as you can see, the property is located within stage two. The stage two area had a sewer availability of March 2020. Therefore, the discharger was to cease discharging and connect to the sewer system within 180 days after March 2020, which sets a compliance date of September 2020. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates the distance of sewer to discharger property as being less than 200 feet. The blue shaded area depicts the discharger's property. The green line depicts the sewer main. The black line depicts the lateral to the property. The white dot depicts the approximate location of the septic tank. And down on the right lower corner of the illustration, there is a 50-foot scale, which suggests that the lateral is less than 50 feet in length. The basin plan defines sewer as being available for residential parcels when the public sewer on any building or exterior drainage facility connected thereto is located less than 200 feet from any existing or proposed building or exterior drainage facility on the parcel, and the parcel abuts and is served by such public sewer. Therefore, this property met the criteria of sewer availability as defined in basin plan. Next slide. This slide demonstrates the property as being inhabitable. So again, we had used Google to take a street view screenshot of the property, and as you can see, there is a home there at the property. Next slide. This slide demonstrates that water is available at the property and is ready to be used at the inhabitants' discretion. Next slide, please. This slide and the next slide depicts the attempts to notify the discharger of the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition and the requirement to cease discharging to the ground via septic tank. The basin plan requires that the discharger be notified prior to their respective sewer availability date. And as such, the High Desert Water District sent their first notification of the upcoming sewer availability during the month of April 2018, and then sent a second notification of the sewer availability during the month of August 2019. Next slide. In addition to receiving notices from the High Desert Water District prior to the sewer availability date, the discharger also received notices after the sewer availability date of September 2020 from the regional board staff. On December 11, 2020, the regional water board issued the discharger a notice of violation. The notice of violation notified the discharger of the prohibition of the on-site wastewater treatment systems for the town of Yucca Valley and directed him to comply by ceasing to discharge from the on-site wastewater treatment system and connecting to the community sewer system. On November 19, 2021, the Regional Water Board issued the discharger a second notice of violation and again directed him to comply with the prohibition. On August 14, 2023, Regional Water Board staff issued an additional certified letter in an attempt to contact the discharger to compel compliance. The discharger has not responded to the notices of violation or attempts to seek compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition. Therefore, the prosecution team prepared a tentative cease and desist order with a time schedule to mandate compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in a timely manner. Next slide. To notify the discharger of this hearing and in accordance with hearing procedures and the advisory team's direction, the prosecution team sent the tentative cease and desist order to the discharger via certified mail. The tentative cease and desist order was returned, so the prosecution team resent the tentative cease and desist order via process server. The hearing procedures for this case were also sent via process server. The evidence and witness lists were sent via FedEx mail. And finally, the slides and change sheet were sent via FedEx mail. Mailing was necessary due to the discharger not providing or not owning an email address. Next slide. If adopted, the cease and desist order would compel the discharger to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in accordance to a timely schedule. The cease and desist order would require the discharger to submit documentation such as a cost estimate to connect to the sewer system and decommission the septic tank by November 14, 2024. It would require the discharger to submit a certificate of connection to the sewer system by December 16, 2024. It would require that the discharger be in full compliance by January 1st, 2025. And if there are any delays caused by circumstances beyond this discharger's control, the discharger may request a deadline extension from the executive officer. Next slide. The prosecution team identified a need for clarification on the proposed cease and desist order that should be included before being adopted. In finding 18 of the tentative cease and desist order, language to convey the protection of groundwater from threatened discharges is being proposed, which is consistent with Water Code Section 13301, and as stated in finding 16 of this tentative cease and desist order. Our proposed changes are noted in this slide as bold and underlined. The portion of the finding that we are proposing to change will read, the Regional Water Board finds that Jose J. Reyes owns property on which an on-site wastewater treatment system is located that is being used or could be used, and that a discharge of waste from the on-site wastewater treatment system to groundwater is taking place or is threatening to take place in violation of the basin plan, as described in the basin plan prohibition section of this order. Next slide, please. In summary, the property has a septic tank that has been discharging or threatening to discharge nitrates and other waste to groundwater. Sewer has been available to the discharger since approximately March 2020. Therefore, the discharger was required to stop discharging by September 2020. The discharger was notified by the High Desert Water District prior to the sewer availability date. The discharger was notified by regional board staff after sewer availability date. The cease and desist order sets a reasonable timeline for compliance. The cease and desist order allows for requests for an extension when circumstances are beyond the discharger's control, and they may request that from our executive officer. And next slide, please. In conclusion, the prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the tentative cease and desist order with the change noted. And this ends our presentation, and I'd like to see if our attorney has anything else to say.
Thanks, Michael. This almost ends our presentation. David Boyers, I'm counsel for the prosecution team in this matter. And I wanted to point out that I think there's a disagreement between the prosecution team counsel and advisory team counsel on the standard for showing a threatened violation of the basin plan. The issue statement that is before you in the summary report suggests that the prosecution team needs to establish that the residence is or will be inhabited or otherwise occupied such that domestic wastewater will be generated. We think that's the incorrect standard. We think the standard for showing a threatened discharge in violation of the basin plan should be the existence of a septic tank, as shown generally by the existence of a home, and occupancy or the potential to occupy the home, right? Because a vacant home, while it may not be discharging to septic today, may become occupied tomorrow or in the next week or in the next month, and will, at that point, threaten a discharge in violation of the basin plan. The alternate standard, as suggested by your counsel, would require that your staff continually monitor for occupancy, right? So they'll be required to go out there. Are we gonna go knock on doors and make sure people are answering their doors and ask if they're using water? We recognize in this particular case that we don't have evidence, strong evidence of recent water use. As shown by the water bill. But again, I think, you know, the purpose of the basin plan is not just to address those that are discharging, but it's to protect the entire groundwater basin from those threats for those all of the homes, right, that have the potential to discharge. So I would ask that you do in this particular case, which is somewhat different than the last case where we did have a lot of evidence of water usage, accept our proposed change sheet. I'll also note that in this particular case, we had difficulty getting Mr. Reyes to accept the certified letter. So we had a process server, and the process server actually went out to the property at issue, found Mr. Reyes, and served him the tentative cease and desist order. So he was out there at that point and received the tentative cease and desist order. So whether he's out there today, I don't know. He may be out there tomorrow. He may have tenants. He may have guests that may use water. And that's all I had. Thank you.
Do we have any? The discharger is not present, correct?
No.
And we do not have any additional public comments. All right. I recognize Mr. Boyer's statement. I do have a few questions, I guess. One regarding the process server. It says in the record here that the person served was actually his sister in Anaheim, and not necessarily. So I guess that's part of one of my concerns, I guess, with this case is that I still don't see a direct connection established with Mr. Reyes such that he has been informed. I see here that we've got Angela Vasquez, subject sister, authorized person to accept service of process. And I'm not familiar enough with process serving, so I don't know how that works, but so I'll.
Yeah, sure. I'll try to address that. So there was actually two addresses where we attempted service. One was at the alternate address that was the Anaheim address that the sister did receive service. However, we also put into the record a copy of our proof of service on May 23rd, 2024, to Mr. Jose Reyes at 6366 Hermosa Avenue in Yucca Valley.
Sorry, is this 14 or 15?
It's in my notes. I will get back to you on that. Let me check with staff.
All right, thank you. The other concern I have not discounting Mr. Boyer's standard that they're proposing we adopt, is the Google Street View here that we've been provided to demonstrate occupancy is from 2007. And I'm curious to know if staff have reviewed, more recent imagery. I happen to know you can go into Google Earth and look at, you know, imagery taken from a number of years to demonstrate that, you know, somebody is in fact living there and is in fact discharging. And I think that ties into the fact, or ties into the billing record with, you know, this fairly minimal evidence of discharge. But
Chair, I have a question.
When was the date on that Google Street View?
Google Street View is 2007.
So I have a question, clarification I'd like from your question. The discharger in charge of the whole thing up there is not the discharger. High Desert Water District is providing all of the wastewater. Mm-hmm. They've gone through a number of things that Mr. Perez has pointed out. Shouldn't we assume, based upon what they've been doing, that the house is, someone could live there, whether they're there or not?
Legally, no. It's not a good idea to assume things.
Well, I'm still going to say assume. That they've done their due diligence, and we don't have to try to redo what they've done?
No. I think we've got a record here that shows, I don't know. Does High Desert Water, can they provide that contact has been established with, you know, the occupant of the house? I think they can establish that a mailer was sent out, and that's what the prosecution team has provided us. But I mean, you know, if this server report was to the party in question at the, it looks like you managed to give it to their sister at the Yucca Valley address. Is that what I'm reading here in Exhibit 14? But I don't think the High Desert Water District.
I think there is a proof of service. So there are two proofs of service.
Correct.
One was apparently a personal service upon Jose Reyes at the Yucca Valley address. And then the second instance of service was on his sister on his behalf at an Anaheim address.
Well, it says the person served is the same as in 2A. I'm sorry, I'm reading this incorrectly. Understood. Yeah. Okay.
Each, you have to read those forms as like self-encapsulating. Like,
right, okay.
Think of it as a box.
Yeah, my apologies. So that clarifies my question for the servers. Thank you. But to Mr. Music's question, I mean, sure, I guess, like, yeah, we can assume they did their due diligence, but I don't know if them reaching out addresses the question I have of, like, is somebody
Mr.
here?
We also just, do not
I'd like
have
to point out that in 2011, this board put a septic prohibition, basin plan amendment, on that area up there. So this has been going on now for 13 years.
Mm-hmm. Member Music, I just want to point out the fact that there is no one from High Desert Water District other than former management here at this.
No, there is.
Is there?
Board member Bob Statham is here.
Ah, very good.
And he's been on the board since, what, 1992?
All right. So I guess we don't have any testimony or any other records from someone who actually went out to this property and saw that it was occupied. So I do not, in this particular instance, this is our order, and this is an evidentiary proceeding. Sometimes assumptions are appropriate, but in this case, respectfully, that's not the best practice.
My suggestion here is we need to be imposing our 2011 order against septic tanks. What I guess I would suggest is that, knowing that the prosecution team does have additional evidence that has not been included in this record, that we continue this item to a future date and allow the prosecution team to establish a stronger record of either current ongoing habitation or discharge prior to making any motion or prior to issuing the cease and desist order. That's my only suggestion, that we continue it rather than deny it or move it forward.
You know, when I look at page 11 and 12 of the presentation and the outreach by High Desert Water District and the outreach by the regional staff four different times, a total of eight, I think we have sufficient data. And when 98% of the properties up there have hooked up, I don't think we need to delay this. I think we should move forward and get 100% hooked up.
I don't think it's an issue of delaying this. We just issued a cease and desist order for one that was more strongly established. I'm just concerned that we haven't really demonstrated adequate evidence of discharge here, of violation. That's my concern.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to follow up on what Mr. Boyers said. There is sort of a disagreement. I think what we need to fill in, what we need to decide as a matter of policy is, what is that threshold? What is the proximity of the threat for that discharge in violation of the prohibition? What we're really talking about here is not necessarily the connection with High Desert Water District system. What we're talking about is how likely enough that they're going to be discharging wastewater from their on-site wastewater treatment system in violation of the prohibition. What we have in evidence right now is we have a water bill from 2024 that indicates there was precisely one unit of consumption on the property. That's consumption in any form. We don't know where that water went in 2024. And we have evidence that in November of 2007, this property was inhabited. We don't have any knowledge about what's currently going on this property. The issue that we always, you know, we can talk about a threat to water quality in the abstract, but what the statute actually requires is the board needs to find that a discharge of waste is taking place or threatening to take place in violation of our basin plan prohibition. What is the proximity of that threat? Does it need to be conceptual? Does it need to be theoretical? The board has various options at its disposal, or it can choose how proximate that threat needs to be. Is it, if the board wants to take a position that says the mere absence of a sewer connection without any further evidence, the existence of a residential property with an on-site wastewater treatment system and without the connection to the sewer system, that is a threatened discharge. If the board wants to take that legal position, it can, but that is what it's doing. It's without any further evidence, without anybody going up there and taking a look at what's going on this property, or how likely that someone is to move on. Let's say that they wanted to abandon this property. I know that, I mean, given that there is one unit of consumption, which I believe in a prior proceeding is some number of gallons, it's over 700. I think Mr. Perez could confirm.
748 gallons per one unit of water.
Okay, for one unit of consumption. So that means that in 2024, there was one unit of consumption, whether or not that was maybe even perhaps like 3 gallons, someone, you know, it kind of like the odometer ticking over, that could also be the case. But we know that someone purporting to be Jose Reyes was served on the property according to the property server, but yet at the same time, there is very little water being used on this site, and you need to determine whether or not a discharge of wastewater is taking place or threatening to take place on this site such that water will be discharged from the OTS.
So I have a question. Back in 2011, when we passed the Basin Plan Amendment to prohibit discharges from septic tank, didn't say a gallon, it didn't say a half a cup, it didn't say 100 units of water. It said septic prohibition, no discharges from septic tanks. What does that mean?
That means water, wastewater, cannot leave the septic tank.
Any amount, correct?
In any amount.
Right. So when you start talking about one unit of water over a year, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter based upon the basic basin plan amendment.
But we don't know. I mean, you made that point that it could be irrigation that's not going through a septic tank.
It doesn't matter, but you don't know.
Exactly, we don't know.
So what do we do? When 99% of the people have hooked up because of the septic prohibition,
I think you request a stronger standard of evidence in demonstrating that these are, you know, worth moving forward on. I think there are perhaps other, 99%, there's still other cases out there that we can continue moving forward on while this case is built to, I should say, the board's satisfaction.
I have a comment on that. We aren't talking about kindergartners here. These people have received plenty of notifications. They have an active water meter. Sometime, if it's not, it was active, it still might be active. I guess the district can tell, the water district can tell us that. But when he got served on May 23rd, 2024, directly to him at 6 o'clock p.m., and he hasn't contacted anybody, right? Well, I mean, he could have had, they could have had a chance to do what you're saying and try to explain and tell us whether they had water or not, but they didn't. They ignored it.
Well, I wouldn't say they ignored it. I am concerned about there being a language barrier, given that the discharger's full name is in Spanish, and so is their sibling. And I don't want to assume what their primary language is, but I do recommend for future cease and desist orders if we could have in place for staff to provide like a notice of violation or tentative cease and desist order to be also provided in Spanish. I know we're in a diverse community and not everybody has a direct person in their network who can translate paperwork that is code language and law.
If I can just make a comment to Member Wright's or respond to Member Wright's comments from a moment ago. The issue here is clearly what's in the record indicates that this people are sticking their heads in the sand and that people have not responded, or maybe intentionally or perhaps, you know, inadvertently, but people are not responding to our notices. However, the people's non-response is not what is at issue here. The issue is whether or not the prosecution team has provided sufficient evidence that leads you to believe that a discharge of waste is threatening to take place from this septic tank.
Well, let me add one other thing.
I get that.
This discharger, who is in phase one, is being assessed $18,000 and is paying that. You would think, with common sense, if you had no discharge coming, you would go to the water district and say, hey, take me off. I'm not going to pay this because I'm not doing anything. They haven't done that. They're paying for the sewer system.
And yet they also have not connected.
Correct. And this is a vehicle to make them connect. And unfortunately, they could have connected. There were grant monies available, they would have paid nothing to connect. But they're past the deadline.
I'd like to hear from staff.
Yeah. I just have a response to Board Member Beltran Serrano. And I did consider, you know, this language barrier. But, I mean, I believed that when you receive something that comes from the water board and it comes certified and does have my name, has a phone number, at least, you know, the homeowner can find out what this means, because it is coming from our official mail out. And so at least there's a phone number and there's a name there. But that's all I wanted to say.
I think my only preference is that these be less circumstantial and more evidential. I understand all the points that are being made, and I think there's a lot of reliance on common sense, which is not necessarily the best move to be making, I think, with, you know, in all cases. But I don't see any inherent, this person hasn't connected. I don't foresee them connecting because we issued this. I don't see a problem or a catastrophic problem with continuing this to allow the prosecution team to build a stronger case. That would be my only preference. So we establish a precedent moving forward that these are being based on strong evidence of discharge, of release, and not just we are issuing these because they need to connect, which they do, but I want to establish a standard here, I think, is my goal, rather than just sending these all out.
Okay, I got a question.
So I'm just confused. What do you see, from your perspective, that we shouldn't be doing this? What hasn't been done that should be done?
For starters, staff have not been to the property.
Pardon?
For starters, all we have is a picture of this property from 2007, and there is a water bill indicating that almost no consumption of water from the High Desert Water District has taken place on this property within the last year. I also want to impress upon the board members that this is an evidentiary proceeding, and there are certainly very powerful and compelling policy preferences that, of course, we want to see everyone hooked up, you know, within this service area. But at the same time, this is an individual order that needs to be based on evidence.
Yeah, so if I may make allusions to the last case we just looked at, there was documentation from Google Street View as recent as 2023 demonstrating very clear habitation and water usage given the thriving plants. There was a water bill that was showing consistent and extensive use over the past 12 months versus this particular case. We have a photo from 2007 with zero updates in the past, whatever that difference is, and minimal use from the water bill. So I would just like to see a stronger case made that water is, in fact, being produced on this property and is being discharged.
Is the water meter live? Does anybody know that? Is it shut off by the water district?
There is, based on that, we got a billing printout from the High Desert Water District. All we have in the evidentiary record is the billing printout that is from this year. And the prosecution team did request to submit supplemental evidence of additional billing records from previous years. Continuing this proceeding would allow for them to submit that to give the discharger a fair opportunity to oppose that supplemental evidence, and also to allow the prosecution team to perhaps go out to the property and take a picture of it and show you so that you can actually see the property within the last two decades, you know, a picture from within the last two decades.
So I have one question. Why is this before us today? How did this get here? Why is it here?
Because the prosecution team issued this along with many other cease and desist.
But why did it even go to the prosecution team? What initiated this item? Wasn't it the water district?
No.
It wasn't.
The water district does not decide when we bring prosecutions.
Well, who initiated this being on the agenda?
So just taking a step back, the staff of the regional board issued a large group, actually in two series. They issued, I think, five or seven, a number of cease and desist orders back in February, and then some months later they issued 10 or so more.
What initiated that?
That would be staff.
But why did staff get that direction? Where did it come from?
Well,
didn't it come from the water district?
No. They are not directed to do anything. This is staff implementing the regional board's basin plan.
Then how did the staff know those properties weren't connected? Where did that information come from?
Because they would have asked the water district.
Okay.
And so they then requested the prosecution team, having initially issued a whole series of draft cease and desist orders for hearing at a future date. They then requested that a handful of them in separate hearings, like there was a group that was set for hearing in September, and then there was a group that was requested for hearing in October, and we're now hearing the second batch of those.
So I was under the impression that High Desert Water District had properties that weren't connected, and that they came to this office, this staff, and asked for assistance, and gave them a list of the properties that didn't connect. And then the staff took that and started doing their process. So my take, if that's the case, I think High Desert Water District did their due diligence about whether someone should be hooking up or not before they passed it on to the state.
Have they ever said that? I saw no record in there saying of any statement to staff saying that, hey, this property is occupied and is still discharging wastewater through its on-site wastewater system. What we see is a bunch of notices that, hey, you have to connect. Hey, you haven't connected. I'll let Mr. Perez and his colleagues speak more extensively on that, but we don't have any statements, which I will say there are evidentiary problems with someone making statements outside of this proceeding to someone on staff and then staff saying, oh yeah, that person told me. There are hearsay exceptions within an administrative proceeding, but that can only go so far. But putting that aside, there is nothing in the record that says, oh yes, like where the High Desert Water District is certifying to us or telling us or affirming that this property is continuing to use its aughts for the disposal of wastewater.
Certifying? So when they give a list of properties that haven't connected,
yep.
Would you assume they did their due diligence and they know that there could be discharges from this property before they gave it to the staff?
Well, the High Desert Water District would not be in control of those on-site wastewater systems. They don't know whether they're not being used. All they know is that there is not a sewer connection. And I don't know what else, and Mr. Perez could speak to what goes on into that consideration and what he was told by the High Desert Water District. So I'm going to stop speculating and ask him.
Okay, thank you. About three board meetings ago, I gave a presentation of the progress and how we have 96% compliance with the connections to sewer. The parcels on that list that made up the original 4,400 were parcels that had water available to those parcels. The water district did not, they provided us the list of homes on the different stages within phase one, and each of those parcels had an active water meter or a water meter there. They did not tell us whether there's water being used or not being used, but those parcels were not vacant. To their records, they showed like these are people that should be connected. So as part of that process, when we took that list, I did a lot of street views, make sure there was something there. I did also these cease and desist orders are coming. If you noticed, last month there were one that was on stage one, and these more recent ones are stage two. So the way we're bringing them to the board is that those are the oldest. Those that had sewer availability for the longest period of time are those the ones that are coming to the board. So if you notice, you haven't seen any in stage three, four, et cetera, because they've had less time of notices.
Hey, Michael, just for clarification, sure. This is phase one and all of phase one.
Correct.
They might have been separate state. They had like 10 stages within phase one,
correct.
But it's all phase one. Phase
correct.
Two and phase three is in the process. They're going to start something, but they haven't hooked up any of those. They haven't built the infrastructure for phase two or phase three. So all these properties are phase one.
Correct, or phase one. But what I was clarifying were the stages within phase one.
Right.
Mr. Right. Perez, did someone actually tell you from the High Desert Water District, did someone actually tell you these properties are currently being occupied?
There was part of the definition when I gave the presentation showing that these are viable parcels, and I forgot what the term was to demonstrate that these were parcels that had
so your presentation?
Yes, a presentation of mine.
So you gave the presentation that said these are viable parcels?
Yes, I gave a presentation.
But the High Desert Water District didn't affirm that these properties were occupied or anything else.
Well, the list came from the High Desert Water District.
Okay.
Of those parcels that are not connected.
Okay. The list was just the parcels that are receiving the assessment but not connected?
Correct. The parcels that we received had water meters there. So in other words, we did not receive a list of vacant parcels with no water available to it.
Okay.
And I gave that definition in my presentation to demonstrate how much progress we've done so far. Mm-hmm. And I believe that was probably about 3 board meetings ago.
Okay.
I have a question for David. If we would do a continuance in this, what would the time frame be? And the reason I'm asking is that to me there's a red flag. If this individual is actually paying the money and yet they're not complying, I'm also concerned that there is a language barrier. I'm thinking as I'm hearing this, my mom owns properties and she doesn't read English. And by the time she gets one of us, if she finds one of us to read it for her, she would just put it away or just like not know what to do. So that to me is a concern. How much time would they be allowed to continue? And could we look into it just a little further, maybe actual communication with the owner?
There are absolutely no time constraints for when this matter can be heard or needs to be heard. So you could continue it a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, whenever, you know, it's however long the board thinks would be an appropriate amount of time to resolve the issues with any concerns they may have if they do have concerns about this case.
Can it be continued within a time frame at the prosecution team's discretion so that we don't have to specify?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, David, I have a question for you on page 12 of the presentation.
Hang in there. Okay. All right, I've got it in front of me.
Okay, outreach by regional board staff.
Mm-hmm.
So what did they need to do the first item? First notice of violation, December 2020.
They sent a letter? That notice of violation, I believe, is in the record.
How much evidence did they need before they could legally mail that out?
It's not a legal standard. There is, like, a notice of violation is simply a document that a notice to a person that they are in violation of some sort of order, permit, or prohibition. So there is not an evidentiary standard for issuance of notice of violation now. Staff usually don't issue those things without having something to go on. Okay. In this case, it appears to have been they got a list from High Desert Water District of the parcels that had not hooked up, and based on that information, they sent out that notice of violation. Okay. I'll let Mr. Perez or someone else comment if I missed anything.
So what you're saying is that what we currently have on the agenda before the board is different than this first notice of violation.
So yes.
Pardon?
Yeah, absolutely. It very much is.
Why would we want to send a notice of violation if you're not in violation? I would think that should be the most important thing we do is the first item. And no one should get a notice of violation if they're not in violation.
Well,
by doing that, I would assume they could be in violation. That's why we do this.
I actually would push back on that slightly. Notices of violation are sometimes also meant to initiate a collaborative conversation saying, hey, we believe that you're not in compliance with this order. Let's talk about what you're going to do to address that. As Mr. Boyers would be the authoritative person on this, a notice of violation is part of the State Water Board's enforcement policy, and specifically it's the idea of progressive prosecution, which means we don't just like to surprise people with suddenly, oh, here's a tentative cease and desist order, now you have to defend against something that very serious, significant civil liability could follow from. And it, you know, we put people on notice that we think they're not in compliance, and you know, it is possible. Sometimes there are situations where someone said, oh, no, I did submit it. It happens. Or sometimes, you know, there are a whole variety of circumstances.
Yeah,
and
but
quite frankly,
let's not go to sometimes. Let's go to
notices of violation do not always go through attorney review.
It has a septic prohibition by the state in 2011. Let's just concentrate on that and not
sure.
other things outside.
So wait. So
then 11 months later, they issue a second notice of violation.
Yes.
Okay. So they may not be in violation, and we can issue a notice of violation?
Well, let's go through what is the violation. So the violation would be you are not hooked up to the waste. You are not hooked up to the sewer system.
Exactly.
The legal standard, however, the legal standard for issuance of a cease and desist order is not you haven't connected to the sewer system. The legal standard for the issuance of a cease and desist order is there is a discharge of waste that is threatening to take place in violation of a basin plan prohibition. That is not the same as what that necessarily, that NOV would have necessarily been based on. Furthermore, the weight that this is an evidentiary proceeding. What the board is now doing, this is now a trial to determine whether or not this individual who owns this property is threatening to discharge wastewater from his on-site wastewater treatment system in violation of that prohibition. The issuance of a notice of violation is not the basis, is not evidence in and of itself.
So what document should we use to be step in step with the septic prohibition of 2011, the basin plan amendment? What document should mirror that? It sounds like the cease and desist order is a conflict.
Well, no,
why isn't there a document that says, okay, based upon the septic prohibition in 2011, you're in violation, we're going to penalize you?
So you're asking what evidence would establish the threat and discharge?
Not what evidence, what document would be in lockstep of the septic prohibition for the entire area?
When you mean lockstep?
Because you just said a cease and desist order isn't the same.
The cease and desist order is a adjudicative determination that this person is threatening to violate that prohibition.
Oh, the prohibition. Before you said the discharge.
A discharge in violation of the prohibition.
The yeah.
It is indisputed that there is a prohibition. It is also indisputed based on the evidence that the prosecution team has submitted that this property has not connected to the sewer system, and that the sewer system is available to this property. And so therefore, it is subject to that prohibition. That prohibition does apply. The last link in the chain before the board here is for you to determine that there is a discharge of wastewater occurring or likely to, or threatening to occur on the property. That is what we are here today to determine.
Okay.
I think it sounds like, and I think this kind of gets to the disagreement, I think, between the two teams, the legal standard. Being in violation of our septic tank prohibition is, I think, the argument that the prosecution team, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so please correct me if I misstate something, but that's where their distinction of, okay, is the property habitable? Because if it's habitable and it has a septic waste, then it's in violation of the septic tank prohibition. However, for the water code, there still needs to be a demonstration that that septic tank is discharging. And I think that is where I think we as a board need to be holding the cease and desist orders to a higher level of evidentiary, a higher evidentiary standard.
Or that it could threaten to discharge. I just want to clarify just so that...
Or threatened to,
proximity of that threat is an open-ended question.
Right.
How likely is it, you know, if you want to make a determination that if there is a septic system that exists and the absence of a sewer connection, in the absence of any other information about the property, if you want to say, therefore, a threatened discharge in violation of the prohibition, you can. If you want to draw a line that, or if you want to draw a line there. If you want to see more evidence about what this property looks like and what's going on the property, that you are within your, before making that determination, you are within your right to do so.
And from my perspective, living where we do, and we have all these snowbirds, and I know personally some people that reside in Canada and didn't come down here for 2 years during COVID, I'm not concerned about water usage, or they just don't come down, they skip a year. They're gonna have very little water usage, but it doesn't eliminate the threat that they could have. So from my perspective, I don't need to see what the water usage is. If there's a home there and it has the capability and it's hooked into the water system, they have the threat of using that septic system. That's all I really think we need to be concerned with, is the threat, and not worry about how much water's been used, because it could be a second home, it could be a third home, and they didn't use it for a year.
Well, and a water meter. I mean, there has to be a water meter on the property to get water to the property to use. So if there's no water meter there, if the water district just pulled it, okay, no water's used. But there are people, and then they can turn off the meter, but people have been known to go around that and utilize it. Therefore, it's not metered, but it does have water available. So what do you do? I mean, if there is a water meter there, there's a potential for a threat.
And those were the properties that were assessed as part of the assessment district, because they were developed properties. They weren't vacant properties.
Correct. And Mission Springs Water District did the same thing as far as giving a list to the regional board to say these are the parcels that have homes on them. They're not vacant parcels. We have a water meter. Help us get these people connected. So I'm
you know there
High
was a
Desert
home.
Did the same thing.
You know there was there was a home in November 2007. Is there a home today?
What is it?
It's her phone.
In all likelihood, yes, unless there was a fire. Or it was a tear down and they rebuilt a new home.
A phone call could tell us right now what's going on with the water meter.
I am concerned with the train of thought that saying there's a water meter and a septic tank, ergo a threat could happen. That is way too much potential without evidence of an actual discharge for my level. I think it is certainly the penultimate step to demonstrating a potential discharge, but I do not think it in and of itself it is sufficient to satisfy the legal standard here that a discharge is taking place or threatens to take place. I mean, otherwise everything is threatening to take place. It's too opaque for me to be comfortable stopping at that level without then further evidence that water is being used on the property regularly that needs to be treated.
Well, I think based upon the 2011 septic prohibition that it's a threat, whether it's being used right now or not.
But that is not the legal standard. It's a threat, like a discharge, if it were to occur, I think it's undisputed. A discharge from this septic tank, if it were to occur, would be a threat to water quality. That is not disputed. What the issue before you today is that, is there a discharge from this septic tank threatening to occur?
Like, if we knew that this septic tank was full, and it was so full that the consumption of that one unit of water caused that septic tank to discharge, that would be the evidence. We would need to say, yes, this has resulted in a discharge. But if that septic tank is empty, and whatever that discharge that they consumed fits into the septic tank without overspilling or discharging, no violation per this legal standard has taken place. That's my concern, I guess.
Wouldn't that be the owner's responsibility?
That's my question.
Why
do we have a document that's in conflict with the septic prohibition of 2011?
There is no conflict.
Yes, there is.
If I may, I'm listening. I think there's valid points that Member Wright and Music have brought up, but I'm also hearing concerns from our chair and other members. So I don't think we're gonna get to be resolved, but I would say if we do continue this, that we don't take a year, because I don't disagree with either side. I'll be real honest with you. I'm like right in the middle. I'm hearing both of you that I know are very well versed in this, and I totally understand what you're saying, I also hear the concerns here, and I'm also listening to our legal counsel. And I think we're going to be here for 2 hours going back and forth. So if you're comfortable, I would recommend that, you know, that we table this, but not for a long period of time.
And,
just to be able to answer the questions on both sides, because I'm, like, right in the middle. I probably will abstain if we have to vote because I'm, like...
Personally, I think since we're not fully staffed, we're spending, our staff spending way too much time for a high-level individual to determine, is there someone right there now using water that's a threat? I mean, that's not what we have these highly educated staff here to do. I think it's a waste of their time, and look at all the time we've spent on it for something that's been governed since 2011, the threat. That's all I say. That's what it is. There's a threat to the pollution, and everyone has to hook up per the state. I think that's, to me, is the overriding thing. The specifics, to me, is not an issue because that property, I could buy it next month. Okay? I'm a threat. I've got a hookup. I may not move into it for 6 months. I don't think that's the issue. The issue is the overriding Basin Plan Amendment of 2011 passed by this board. And I think that should be the number one precedent over everything.
There is no conflict between the direct...
Well, I don't want to go into that anymore. we've discussed that enough.
Okay.
Okay.
I understand. But
that's just my opinion.
And like I said, I don't disagree with either side here. I mean,
and if we defer it, do we want to send our staff now to determine how much water is being used? I don't think that's a good use of their time. I really don't.
Well, obviously, that can be determined by the water meter. But, you know, I am hearing where Member Wright is saying there are ways to circumvent.
If there are. They do it all the time.
Steal water, hook up a hose to the other house.
Don't think about things like that because I wouldn't do that. But, you know, I know that you both have a lot of experience, but I'm just trying to, just in the interest of time, and I know we have a lot of staff here that we're pulling, so I don't know if this is the happy medium or whatnot, but it, like I said, I will validate both sides of this argument because I do agree with both of you. So I'm just trying to figure out a way where we can move forward with something.
So we have three options in front of us, right? We can move the CDO forward as is, we can deny it as is, or we can continue it. I guess I would be in favor of continuing it, but I do want to make sure the prosecution team is hearing appropriate guidance from this board to address also Ms. Perez's question about how long you would need to bring this back so that it isn't out in the wind for, you know, a year.
No.
Is a month sufficient? Is 3 months sufficient? What would you need? First and foremost, do you need
The board, just as a matter of procedure, the board could simply vote to continue it, and then the prosecution team would inform the advisory team when they are ready to have it back on calendar, and then it would be placed on the following calendar, and then we would provide an updated hearing procedure for that. So the prosecution team would get to choose when that happens outside of this vote.
Understood. And then there's a prosecutor. I mean, I guess, there's conflicting opinions on this board, so I don't want to let the prosecution team lose it.
Well, we could also approve it with some additional language, correct?
Mm. And my problem is we just passed one item, and now we're taking the second item and doing something different.
Well, the evidentiary
we're setting a precedent for something different.
Which we always want to be mindful of. So unless the board would favor that option, where we would...
I mean, I'm in favor of continuing this for...
Not a long time.
Yeah, like up to 3 months, I guess.
Max. That's...
I see.
I would like to ask the prosecution team, what does that do for on your side? Does that mess anything up? Is there more work to be... I mean, I just kind of... I'm not sure. We've never done this to delay it, to continue it.
Certainly there is additional work associated with a continuance. Additional travel, additional potential evidence that would need to be gathered. And I would strongly urge this board against a continuance in this matter. And I'll point out again that your Exhibit 14 is a proof of service of the tentative cease and desist order to the address, to the individual. Presumably, he was not standing in a street on a vacant lot when he received that tentative cease and desist order. Presumably, in May, he was there. Also, there is a unit of water use in July. I agree with Board Member Music's assessment of this situation, that based on the water districts or the water district's identification of this property, in addition to multiple notices, this person has had opportunity to come into compliance and has not. It is time to move on to other folks, and we have a list of them that we intend to bring to you. It's important to set a standard that your staff can use appropriate resources to meet, and to be mindful of what you're asking staff to do. So to answer the question directly, I would say if you are going to continue this, my calendar would prefer December. I understand you're not meeting in January, so December or February. I would certainly defer to the chief prosecutor on that.
And our governor has a new water supply strategy for the whole state since we have these dry years and very arid. And one of them is direct potable reuse. And how does that operate? The water from the properties goes into a wastewater system and gets treated and gets put back into the system. If you have septic tanks, you cannot reuse that water.
That's what I'm saying. I do agree with you in that, this has been in place and they should have connected by now. I don't know what the barrier is, but obviously there's something there. I don't know if it's just the person not wanting to be compliant or not. I'm not sure, but I'm just trying to figure out, like, how do we move this forward and ensure that we don't put ourselves in a situation where there may be that discharge and then we're going to be back here saying, oh, gosh. Here we go. But I do agree with what you're saying with the where the threat is there. I completely understand.
And I understand our chair's perspective, mm-hmm. but for me, I think we've discussed it enough. I think hopefully in the future, because we're going to have more of these, they'll come back to accommodate everything. But I think in this case, I would be in favor. I mean, I'll make a motion to approve it as it is, as presented by the prosecution team.
Ms. Owens, did you have any? I saw some head nodding or gesticulating.
Head bowing. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the schedule. You were talking about continuing this. I'm not sure that we can do December, which would put us probably February or something like that. There's a lot of time that is expended on each of these cases. You see a summary of the written notices that are sent to these dischargers. We spend hours calling them. If we have a phone number, we actually do call over and over again to try to get a response. In some cases, we get positive responses. In some cases, we don't. And we leave messages if they have, a message machine on their phones. So, an extraordinary amount of time goes into each of these cases, including this one. So, I'm thinking December may be tight for us.
Let me also ask, too, if a motion is made to approve the CDO and it does not pass, what happens?
And you have another motion on another action.
Sorry, so there was a motion to approve. Is there a second? Or sorry, do I need to close the hearing? Are there any other comments?
I'll do a second so we can talk about it. This owner has owned it since the time that the sewer was put in, correct? I mean, this property was owned by the same person.
Well, the hearing is closed. Do you want to reopen the hearing?
Sorry, yeah.
No, I'm talking, well, no.
Oh, it looked like you were asking the prosecution.
Well, I am, but this is for discussion after the motion was made and seconded. I can't do that.
Nancy? Yes, but I just want to clarify, were you asking a question to the prosecution team?
Well, I'm just asking the question to anybody that remembers, okay?
Nancy, the sewer when it was available may or may not have been this individual.
Well, that's what I was wondering. If anybody knew if this property, how long the owner has owned this property, nobody has that information, or was this property...
It was the name here. Sounds familiar to me, and I may have talked to this individual, but...
Wait. Are you testifying personally?
No, that's okay. Never mind. Closed. I just thought...
Hearing's closed.
Nothing.
He closed
okay.
The hearing.
Okay, I'm done.
All right.
The comment was, I was just responding to Member Music's statement about the name sounding familiar. That's all. I didn't mean to cut you off. Member Wright, I did not mean to cut you off. I apologize.
Thought you meant me.
So we have a motion and a second.
That's correct. All right, roll call vote.
Chair Stanton.
Abstain.
Vice Chair Perez.
Abstain.
Board Member Beltran Serrano.
Abstain.
Board Member Gonzalez.
Abstain.
Wait, just to clarify, when you abstain, you vote no. If you abstain and there's only two people who are not abstaining who vote aye, that motion carries. If you do not want that motion to carry, you do not abstain, you vote nay.
Understood. Can we restart that roll call vote, please?
Okay. Chair Stanton?
Nay.
Vice Chair Perez?
Nay.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Nay.
Board Member Gonzalez?
The tough one. I'm going to say aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
We have a tie.
This is fun.
Yeah.
So now I guess it comes time to further deliberate and we'll have another motion. Or you can bring an alternative motion.
Well, can somebody call the water district and see what type
nope.
of water meter? We can't do that.
What continuing allows you to do is to allow the prosecution team to submit the evidence that they would have submitted at the last minute, and then you can consider it based on that evidence or additional evidence. But no, we cannot just call them in today. This is like a trial.
Yeah, I guess I can make motions as the chair, right? I mean, I would make a motion to continue this item to strengthen the evidentiary record and bring it before the board at a time the prosecution team seems fit.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. Can we please do a roll call vote?
Chair Stanton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez? Was that an aye?
Aye.
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Aye.
Thank you. Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
For the sake of moving it along, I'm going to say aye.
Board Member Music?
No.
Board Member Wright?
No.
We have four ayes and two noes. Motion carries.
All right, thank you to all teams involved.
So, I have a question, though. We had two items today. Is there any way we can give the general information, you know, having an agenda item 1, 2, 3, 4, give the general and just...
Member Music, turn on your mic.
Will you let me finish, please?
Mic.
Give the special items for each property under the agenda so we don't have to hear the same general information multiple times. Is that possible?
Yes. So agenda item, you can vote on multiple orders at the same time. It does get a little complicated, but you can.
Okay. I would recommend we do that. And also, I would recommend that we alter the vote sequence, that it's not always chair, vice chair. I think it needs to rotate. Everyone needs to be first once, second once, third once, so that people can influence other people from their vote.
I'm not sure how that's relevant.
That's not relevant to this. I'm just saying in the future.
So
I think it's relevant.
That we
I think it's relevant.
Our votes, based on what the others vote?
When you have the same order, yes. People can perceive, hey, if the chair votes yes, I'm going to vote yes.
Not necessarily. Not on my, I don't agree.
I'm going to say, Board Member Music, that I don't disagree with you, because in the time that I've been on the board, which is nowhere near where the rest of you have served on this board, but I have seen the pattern that you're describing, where we will approve some items and then we won't approve others, and they're very similar. And I think I've brought that up before a few times, and I think this is almost a good case of what you're saying. So just for the record, I did want to vote the way that I did. I'm not being influenced by anyone. Anyone who knows me knows that I have no problem being the only no vote or the only yes vote. Like, I'll vote my conscience and what I feel. But I do hear you, and I think, being that we are the board, then I think we need to be a little more clear on what we want and how we want it. And we need to be a little more diligent that then we treat every single item that we are either approving or denying equally. And I understand that not everything applies. That's not what I mean by this.
Right.
But in the time that I've been here, I have seen where sometimes there's things that I'm like, what? And they're being passed
right by
majority. So I don't disagree with that statement. And I would even think that maybe in the near future, maybe, you know, starting next year, 2025, then we maybe have a study session for board members, and that we bring that particular item in, and that we have some discussion and some time to really look into that and see why are we voting so differently? Why are I just think it would be very beneficial, because I've had that question a few times, if you recall, and I don't disagree, and I think it's accurate. So I know that staff does a great job. I'm sure, you know, after hearing, I want to thank Cassandra Owens for chiming in with all of that. That was very relevant information. That did sway my vote a little bit, because I did hear you say, well, you know, there's a lot of phone calls. But I still agree with you in that I do see that we could have a very different item, and it's very similar to this, and we vote differently. So I think as the board, I think we should task ourselves with ensuring that we don't put ourselves in this situation.
Noticed that other board meetings I've gone to, sometimes they do a roll call, sometimes they don't. So are there requirements of which items need to be roll called and not?
Because when you have remote participation, there needs to be a roll
calling when we're not required to.
I'd like to say one thing, that I voted my conscience, and I appreciate that all of you guys voted your conscience. I do. I think that makes a good board.
I also like to mention that I do agree with Board Music. The both were so similar, but what stood out to me was the significant difference in usage of the water. The bills that were presented were so different, and that's what had me questioning if there's actually somebody even there or using anything, for that matter.
I believe there's a question directed. Thank you, Vice Chair. There was a question directed about when we do roll calls versus not roll call. Do you want to answer that?
Yeah, when you have remote participation does need to occur via a roll call vote, so that way there's a clear... I mean, you can imagine how, I don't know if you've ever tried to talk during, multiple people try to talk during a Zoom meeting. It gets messy because Zoom, like, has people, like, it mutes out others. It says, oh, this person's talking. So there is a requirement in the government code, generally speaking, that things need to occur by a roll call vote, because otherwise it would just simply be a voice vote. But it does make it easier for the clerk to the board to record those votes. And have a clear record in the minutes.
I'll note that the Coachella Valley Association of Governments, which also does hybrid in-person remote meetings, does not do roll calls, but does request a second, like, does call out remote participants by name to get their vote one way or the other, but it's not roll call for the folks in the room. Hopefully I'm just out, that organization is doing something not up to code, but starting to consider. Anyway, direction to clerk sounds like to get one of those little bingo really? Things. To
if we were going to approve our schedule for 2025, I don't think we need a roll call vote.
Yeah, I wouldn't think
if
so.
If we're going to be penalizing or fining someone, then I think it's good to have a roll
yeah.
call.
Yeah, understood.
I think it's transparency was why it was put in to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, we're going to move on to information items on today's agenda, starting with item 9, Executive Officer's Report. I'll hand it over to Paula.
Good morning, board members, Chair Satin, members of the public, Paula Rasmussen, Executive Officer. A few updates for you today. A site closure approval was issued in September for the Blocker Transportation Site, which is located in Blythe. This was an underground storage tank site, and it has been under investigation and remediation since 2000. The remediation satisfies criteria for closure under the State Board Low Threat Closure Policy, and the project manager for the site is Fawn Lee. I'd like to update you on our office renovation. They started yesterday with the renovation. There's partitions up and workers working now. In addition, the roof is still being repaired, so it's quite busy in the office. There are a few staff in the office, the skeleton crew, but most of the staff is currently teleworking during the renovation. And regarding vacancies, we're still on hold regarding filling vacancies. The State Board developing a plan to address the required vacancy and operational reductions. However, that's still in progress, and we're not certain as to the outcome regarding our ability to hire additional positions. I'd like to note that our next board meeting is on November 12th in this location, and it will start at 2:00. The reason is because the day before is a holiday, and the visual AGP needs to get in here in the morning to set up the system. And the December board meeting will be on December 10th. And this concludes my report.
I've got a question on the Table 1 mandatory minimum penalty status.
Okay, I don't have that in front of me, but go ahead and ask.
Yeah, well, like SD, I'm assuming that school district, Nyland School District, or is that a special district?
Services district, sorry.
Sanitary district, probably. Cassandra, can you check that?
The very first one, is that school district?
Sanitation district.
Oh, sanitation district, okay. And Sealy, CWD?
Community water district.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Paul, excuse me, did you say the December meeting was at 9?
Yeah, the December meeting's back
nine.
To 9 o'clock.
Okay.
The other one was just moved because of logistical needs.
Right,
the time.
And the November's at 2 o'clock. Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
No.
Thank you, Paul. Board member comments. Any comments from the board? All right.
I have one.
Go ahead.
It would be nice when we have these items, like the items we were talking about, during the septic prohibition. How much staff time we actually put on one of these items? Best guess. Not you on your next one. Thank you.
Any other board comments? Vivian, you're good? All right. Okay, moving on to chair's reports. Chairs met on October 7th. Topics of conversation largely revolved around the ongoing budget negotiations to identify final allocations to each regional board. The other big news from that was that WQCC has been postponed to this spring. It is not happening this week or next week, whenever it was supposed to be scheduled, and will likely be I think, maintaining hybrid, but nonetheless, keep an eye out for it sometime in March or April. I'm also pleased to announce that the board has appointed a new executive officer, Mr. Michael Placentia, who is coming to us most recently from the Harupa Community Services District, but has previously served with the City of Riverside, Los Angeles County Sanitation District, and has an extensive background in environmental compliance, including sanitation, stormwater, and enforcement. His start date is currently being negotiated with the state and will coincide with our current executive officer's pending retirement. So we will be very sad to see Paula leave, but we're also very excited to bring Michael on board. So you will be seeing him probably in one or two meetings hence. Those are the updates I have. Council, do we have any closed session items?
Not today.
Woo. All right, next meeting is scheduled for November 12th, 2024, and we are adjourned.
No, we need item 12. Sorry, board meeting dates.
Sorry. We are not adjourned. Item 12, board meeting dates. Tentative calendar in the binder. Are we voting on these or approving these today? Or?
Yeah, we'd like your approval of this calendar. If you don't want to do it today, you can come back in November. For your consideration, these dates.
Are these all Tuesdays again? Tuesdays again? Wednesdays.
These are Wednesdays. Why did we switch?
I think audiovisual folks, I think.
All of them are Wednesdays then?
Sounds like it.
If we vote on it, we can always go back and change it if it doesn't work for somebody.
Well, staff needs a plan around it, so I think.
I'm sorry,
sounds
I didn't
like
get
people
a chance
are ill-prepared.
Okay.
let's defer it until the next meeting. Please, everyone, take a look. Wednesday, right there. Duh. Okay. and we'll, I guess, approve at the next meeting. Sorry about that. Okay. If there's no other items that I've forgotten, we are now adjourned. Thank you all for coming.